Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 30. It's Jaguars Week, and the Steelers come in 3-1. It's Game 2 at Heinz Field, Dave. It's 1 o'clock kickoff, and Steelers had a lot of distractions the past couple weeks going into the game last week. Obviously, all the anthem talk was dominating the podcast. And this week, I thought maybe we were going to get by on Monday with not a lot about Antonio Brown. But as we talked about on Wednesday, Mike Tomlin addressed it Tuesday. Ben Roethlisberger addressed it Tuesday. The national media just won't let this thing go. They are a dog with a bone, and they're going nuts on it. So before we get into everything, Dave, to me, this is nonsense. I saw some local media people talk about whether they should suspend Antonio Brown for a series or a quarter or a half. This is some of the dumbest stuff we've heard talking about the Steelers, I think, over the 8 years we've been doing the podcast, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we have to talk about it because it happened, and then the sideline blow up, then Ben's comments. You know, everything that we laid out there for the listeners on Wednesday had to be done. Antonio Brown on, what was it? Was it yesterday?
Wednesday. I think Wednesday afternoon.
Apologized on Twitter. And, you know, look, I mean, you know, Ben claims he's over it now. Time to move on. I think those guys in that locker room know who Antonio Brown is. Now, is it the Antonio Brown that Ryan Clark tries to paint Antonio Brown to be? Even though Ryan Clark says he doesn't have an issue with Antonio Brown, does he? You know, when they say it's not about the money, it's about the money. When someone has to, without being provoked, say, "Oh, I don't have an issue with him," unprovoked, then he probably has an issue with him, type of thing. So, you know, I don't know. It's all the things that we're forced to talk about. But I mean, look, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. This is not the first time that AB has thrown his hands up and thrown a mini tirade, if you will, or been upset on the sideline yelling at people. This might have been the first time he's thrown a water cooler. It's not going to be the last time that Antonio Brown does something like this either. And I, you know, Todd Haley talked about it on Thursday there, saying, you know, look, he understands, you know what the emotion, the passion that Antonio Brown has, and Haley even chuckled that, you know, he's had his kind of personal blow-ups on sidelines before, obviously before his time with the Steelers there. So should they sit Antonio Brown for a quarter? Should they not put him out there for an opening series? That's just ridiculous. You said what you had to say about him this week, talking about Roethlisberger and Tomlin, Brown has, you know, publicly apologized on Twitter. Let's move on.
All right, let's us move on too. This is where we stand on it, and I think we're. I'd be shocked if we see anything like that in the game on Sunday. Okay, Dave, let's get to the injury report because it was interesting. We spoke Wednesday before it came out. There were some positive signs in the injury report, but some guys didn't practice for various reasons. And then Thursday's injury report was great, but there was one apparent setback. But now, listening to some of the beat writers, maybe it wasn't a setback. So I guess the big question mark here is Marcus Gilbert. And I know you wrote an article for the site about the Steelers, you know, entire starting 22 being healthy and potentially their entire roster being healthy. This is a bit of an unusual and a very obviously positive situation.
This is unicorn-like, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, you, and look, you know, we focus in on the Steelers, but you could probably go around the NFL, all 32 teams, and find, you know, something similar to this, because I mean, injuries happen on a week in, week out basis. You know, the guys that you open your OTAs with, intending maybe, you know, to be your starting 22. Let's just face it. I mean, the odds of that happening and keeping those guys on the field for a full season is probably slim to none. And then after that, you know, trying to keep those guys together for multiple games can even be a stretch there. But yeah, you hit on it. The key guy that everybody should be watching on Friday is Marcus Gilbert.
It's a beautiful feeling to actually do something you love.
I don't know where that came from real quick there, that noise. But yeah, Marcus Gilbert, when you look at what he did on Wednesday, he practiced full. You know, depending on what you want to read, maybe a planned, you know, day on Thursday, field being wet, yada, yada. I mean, we don't know. You know, you would like to think that a guy that's missed the last two games, you know, with a hamstring would be able to practice full in any condition. But, but you know, I'm not there. I don't know what's going on. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on Twitter. So we'll see what happens on Friday. If he, you know, if he does practice limited, if he doesn't practice full, then I find it hard to believe he's going to play. If he practices on a limited basis, he'll probably end the week listed as you know, questionable. And then, you know, we'll speculate from there. But I mean, to me, when you're dealing with these kind of soft tissue injuries, you're either fine or you're not. There is no kind of halfway, if you will. Now, Mike Mitchell has obviously been able to practice this week, and he's been one that's been dealing with a hamstring as well, too. It looks like he'll play. But, you know, outside of that, this is a fairly, fairly healthy team. And you have to go back, according to my research, David, let's assume Gilbert and Mike Mitchell do suit up and then everybody else plays, you know, like they look like they're going to. You have to go back to, I think, week two of the 2014 season to find the last instance of a game where all, quote-unquote, you know, preseason intended all 22 starters played together in a game, and you know that's it, because you know the next game was against the Carolina Panthers in week three, and that was a game that forget who it was that missed that game, but Jarvis Jones, remember, he injured, what was it, his hand or his wrist or something in that game. He was put on IR for a little while, so it all became really unraveled after that week two game against the Baltimore Ravens. So whatever everybody's doing out there listening to this podcast, if you have any superstitions or you sit in the right place on Sunday, keep doing it, because this team has been incredibly healthy and or lucky hand or blessed when it comes to injuries this year.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I'm with you on the Gilbert stuff. If you're in the Western Pennsylvania region, you know, kind of midday yesterday, it started to absolutely pour. It was raining so hard, and I don't know exactly when the Steelers were scheduled yesterday, but it was raining so hard midday that I can't imagine the Steelers even went outside. But they must have stopped, and they practiced later in the afternoon, I'm guessing. But yeah, we'll see with Gilbert. I'm with you, Dave. Even though some kind of beat writers swore that this was a planned off day, I don't know that you have a guy go full, then off, then kind of a walkthrough Friday and expect him to start Sunday. You'd think you'd like to get him a couple back-to-back days. So we'll wait and see. There are plenty of other guys who are there who are closer to it than we are, and the Friday injury report will be our guide. But it is nice that the Steelers are where they are in terms of the health. And we talked about Cam Sutton and, you know, his situation coming forward over the next couple of weeks and what's going to happen with him. So that'll be something for us to keep an eye on. Dave, as we get into this, there was one of the fantasy writers for NFL.com does some good stuff, and you know, one of the things about fantasy is you're figuring out, you know, how guys perform, and I know you play some fantasy. I'm not really a fantasy guy, but it doesn't mean that some of the analysis is not also very good. Matt Harmon wrote about the Jags corners when looking at the matchup with Antonio Brown, and he has this as the best corner, you know, and I think a lot of people agree that the best corner duo in the NFL, and you've got you know the situation with these guys. Bouye coming over from the Texans, and the two guys, the two corners so far this year, Dave, have stayed on their side, and there's no reason to think that they will play differently. We didn't get into a lot of this with Ryan O'Halloran about, you know, what kind of defense they expected. We expect Jags to be playing man zone, kind of a mixed bag. What do you expect to see, and do you expect to see the Steelers look to move Antonio Brown into the slot at all, or just kind of go with what they're doing and assume that they'll execute better than the Jags?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see any drastic changes on the offensive side of the ball about where to line Antonio Brown up. Look, I mean, these corners, no doubt, they played well, but outside, I mean, who look at the look at the receivers that duo has faced this year. Okay, they got Nuke Hopkins in week one, right, with the Texans there. Tennessee, I mean.
No big names in Tennessee, you know.
Baltimore in week three, I mean.
Yeah, okay, we've seen it.
Mike Wallace is fast, and Macklin can do a few things. But, I mean, when you look, and Perryman's, you know, really still unproven at this point. When you look at the Ravens, do you think, oh, that might be considered one of the top, you know, receiving units in the league? No, you don't. The Jets, can you name anybody on the Jets outside of Robbie Henderson? You know, with their receiving crew. So, look, they have played well on tape. I'm not going to lie there. With that,
well, and we did the thing we did here is we heard Ryan say that, you know, Jalen Ramsey's their best player. He said he is just a complete stud, and so there'll be something to pay attention to. He'll be on the left side, and you know, AB, if you just look historically, he tends up to line up on the Steelers' left side a little bit more on the right side, and oftentimes he'll line up almost exclusively on the left side. So that's just something for you to watch as a fan when you're watching this game, is kind of how do the Jags corners line up, how close to the line of scrimmage do they line up, and is AB going to line up mostly left side as he moved around? And with Juju, they're not going to move Juju to the outside probably at any point this season. So if Juju's a slot guy, will AB ever be a slot guy in a three wide receiver set? Will he be in motion at all? And will he be a slot guy in a four wide receiver set? Lots to think about there, but just think about how, you know, Todd Haley's attacking this, and how, you know, if the Jags under the guideline of defensive coordinator Todd Walsh do anything to differently to deal with Antonio Brown.
Here's the thing. Remember a few years ago when before the Steelers played the Broncos, it was all the talk about the no-fly zone, Chris Harris and Tlaib and I think who was their safety, Ward back there, and oh boy, this is the best cover corner duo or second.
Sure,
second
and they were, and they were, and they were. It was legit.
And what did AB do to them?
Oh, they just absolutely torched them that second half. That second half with the Steelers in that game, down, were they down 28-10, Dave? I mean, they were down significantly in that second half. They just absolutely torched those guys.
I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, they shut AB down this week. Okay, they'll have my attention. As the great Ric Flair once said, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. Woo! You know, that's about what it boils down to here. And look, there's going to be some good matchups. I mean, don't forget that Martavis Bryant can get loose on the other side. So regardless of where Antonio Brown is, and AJ Bouye, when you go look at the tape, he's been beaten over the top twice this year. Okay, on straight, you know, flat go routes. So don't think that regardless of whoever lines up on him on Bouye on the outside, whether it be Antonio or Martavis Bryant, Ben's going to take a couple of shots if he can get the right look in those situations, because some guys have flat out run away from Bouye already this season. Jalen Ramsey, you know, not so much. I do think that he is probably the better of the two, but what? Which one leads in interception? Bouye have two interceptions, and Ramsey won't. I forget, but they can take the ball away. They're going to play up a little bit, and you know, they mix it on up with some zone coverages and some man. It's a good defense, and now is it a good time to kind of segue into the run defense?
Yeah, and it, you know, this is the really kind of – you look at this Jags team and you look at the defensive front. I always forget how to pronounce Yannick's name, Dave. Is it
Ngakoue.
Look, he's an edge rusher who's, you know, had a really nice start to his season. He's a second year guy, a third round pick out of Maryland, who's gotten a lot of people's attention. Probably not a guy who was a familiar name, but two of the other guys on the defensive line, Malik Jackson, who was absolutely dominant in the the Broncos Super Bowl run. To me, he was the best player on the field against the Steelers defensively in the game they played in Pittsburgh and the game they played that the Broncos won in Denver. I mean, he was a star that was surrounded by stars as well. And so he gets his opportunity going to Jacksonville. And you got Calais Campbell, who is a big-time guy as well, a Pro Bowl caliber edge guy. And with Posluszny and Miles Jack, two guys who have been as sound as anybody at making tackles, it's somewhat confusing to me, having not watched enough of them. I've seen them play twice. Dave, you've probably seen more tape than I have seen game action. It's just a bit surprising to me that they have been run on as successfully as they have by other teams.
Boy, Todd Haley put it best talking about Malik Jackson yesterday. Disruptive. He's a very disruptive guy. You look, you know, we've got fans and analysts and all. All of us have to do a better job of moving forward into more advanced stats. We really do. And the NFL can really help with this if they'd start pushing them as official stats. I mean, when's the last time we've had a new official stat added? You know, sacks should have been sacks way before they became sacks. But I digress. And what I'm getting at here is you can look at the Jaguars and you can look at their yards per carry average entering week five is 5.71. and that you look at that and you think, my God, what, you know, that's a horrible, horrible run defense, worse than the NFL statistically. But I think then you have to, boy, here we go into the math, you know, the average and versus the median and all like that. Remember, they've only played four games, and this Jaguars defense has already given up 12 running plays of more than 10 yards, and 11 of them were by opposing running backs, with three of those going for more than 20 yards. Now, those three more than 20 yards were way more than 20 yards, and it really kind of skews these things. And in fact, one of them I think was the defense thought it was a down by contact.
Well, Bilal Powell last week jumping over a defender. If you watch this, it ends up being a 75-yard touchdown. And there is a Jag on the ground, and if you watch this in live action, you absolutely think that, you know, he gets tripped up, and he realizes it. There are three Jags around, secondary Jaguars around him. He's, you know, taking it for about an 8-yard gain, and he just gets up and starts sprinting. And it, you know, you do it with it to any NFL guys. You give one guy a 5-yard head start, who's reasonably fast, and it's going to be virtually impossible for somebody to get him. So he goes another, you know, 65 yards for the touchdown. So, yeah, as somebody said in reviewing that game, the defense didn't get many breaks because there were, you know, so most plays, most touchdowns, most big plays in the NFL are, you know, you get what it's either luck or skill, and it's generally skill. But the game in this one, there were some lucky plays and long touchdowns that were lucky plays in that game.
And to kind of close up thoughts on them, those 11 running back plays gained against the Jaguars defense that gained more than 10 yards gained a total of 297 yards, and that's 50%. Those 11 runs are 50% of all yards gained by running backs against the Jaguars defense this season. So if you back those big plays out and then look at their average yards per carry against, you get a three, and this is running backs and running backs only, 3.26 yards per carry. So 5.71 to 3.26, boy, you know, based on 11 plays. And sure, yeah, you can cherry pick across the league and all. But even if you pulled out those three extremely long runs, you're going to lower that yards per carry down tremendously. Now, as you know, I like to look at successful run rates against teams and all. This is where you can kind of tell that the Jaguars, run defense against running backs might be a little susceptible to it this week. Their success rate so far against the position or running backs have had a success rate of 46.2% against the Jaguars run defense. So that's obvious.
Is there an NFL average?
There is. I can't tell you what it is, but I can tell you that 46.2 is over it.
Yeah, so I mean it's something like 30 to 33%, right? Right?
It's probably around 41 or so.
Okay, it's that high. I was thinking it was 30 to 35 in that range. Okay, as a barometer. All right, we'll figure that out.
But I'll try to research this later on today, David, if I have time league wide. I would venture a guess that 46.2% of the Jaguars is well into the bottom third of the league. So they can be run on. Specifically, I think I'm trying to remember what my run directions, where my run direction stats here are. Not so much, I don't think. Let me see here, directions for them. Trying to think if it was up the middle or not. Okay, here we go on their rush defense. Left guard. Now, once again, some big plays involved in here. They are 32nd in the league on runs to left guard, giving up an average of 6.67. Runs to right tackle, their average gain 11 yards, last in the league in that area. They're not good on the edges either. Most teams try to run up the middle on them. 32 plays right up the middle have averaged a 4-yard gain, and that's 16th, ranked 16th in the league there. They are seemingly best on runs to right guard, probably right where Malik Jackson normally is. Teams have only averaged 0.21 yards a carry on 14 runs against the Jaguars defense in that direction there. So that's second best in the league when talking about runs to right guard against a defense. So yeah, look, I think the Steelers have the slight edge here in the running game, both on the offensive side of the ball and on defending the rush, but I don't think it's as great of one as maybe the statistic will tell you, the raw yards per carry and stuff.
Well, one of the, you know, we look at matchups in this game, and we highlighted Antonio Brown against the secondary. The David DeCastro, Malik Jackson matchup will be, you know, depending exactly how guys line up. You never know exactly who's going to line up and how they're going to line up. But Malik Jackson's going to be an interior guy that Pouncey and between Pouncey, Ramon, and DeCastro, whether DeCastro is pulling or not, you know, we're going to have to deal with. So that'll be something to pay attention to. And, you know, we talk about the front that they play. For me, it's going to be fun to watch Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey in this game. These are their first and second round pick in the 16 draft. Really high talent guys, and see what they can do. And then for a lot of local people, Paul Posluszny has had a very nice career. Obviously, he spent a lot of time in Buffalo, and watching him as well. So, Dave, let's go to the other side of the ball for the Jags. And you look at this, and I think Mike highlighted the fact that they don't have Allen Robinson, another Penn State guy who was their number one receiver. And it's people know that my love affair with Marquise Lee, and he's never developed into the guy that I thought he might be. I thought he would definitely be a Manny Sanders type of guy. He hasn't been that out of USC. We'll see if he goes today and if he's fully healthy for the game. Mercedes Lewis had a surprisingly good year last year, is a, you know, pass catching tight end. And then, of course, we talked about the running back situation, and Leonard Fournette's the guy, with Blake Bortles, a quarterback who, you know, there's some serious question of whether they were going to pick up Blake Bortles' option, whether he's a guy that, you know, had, would even be the starter coming into this season with Chad Henne. You know, Ryan Nassib is the third string quarterback. So there's just, there's nothing on this offensive side of the ball here that if you're a Jags fan, that even, you know, they used a first round pick on Fournette after having TJ Yeldon and Chris Ivory. So they took the best player on the board, but it wasn't necessarily the biggest position of need. And you look and say, you know, what else you got there? They got a left tackle in Cam Robinson, but I don't know, Dave. It's still disappointing for me to look at the offensive talent on this side of the ball and, you know, see the lack of it.
And you're right about Marquise Lee. Well, I mean, even if he plays with this rib injury, it's clear that it's bothering him quite a bit to sit out both Wednesday and Thursday. He might not play, and if he doesn't, man, they got who's up next? Arlen, trying to remember his name real quick, but they are hurting at the wide receiver position. Obviously, they had lost
Mercedes Lewis, Marquise Lee. You were talking about Marquise Lee. They got Allen Hearns, and they got Aurelius Ben.
Aurelius Ben is the one I'm thinking of. Right. Yeah. He'll have to play. I think he only has one catch on the season so far. Ben does. So if they don't have Lee, you know, that's really, really going to handicap them. Now, if you look at them offensively on tape, it's clear what they want to do. They want to run Leonard Fournette and Chris Ivory, and they want to run those guys down your throat. They'll use a lot of fullback with Tommy Bohannon in there. You'll see some 21 packages with Bohannon and a tight end. You'll see some multiple tight end situations there. They like to run the power. They like to run the counter. They do a lot of the stuff that the Steelers running game does. Those ISO plays, they'll run some RPOs. Trying to think, you know, very – if they want to surprise the Steelers, they can come out and run some, you know, some outside zone. I really haven't, in going through their running plays, I really haven't seen a lot of it. They do run it. They just don't run it a lot. Their offensive line is very blue collar like. They're fun to watch. They really, really are. They get the job done. They got some guys that can get to the second level, get off blocks. I think their tight ends do a great job of blocking. Fullback Tommy Bohannon's done a nice job as well too. They like to get Fournette and Ivory north and south, and it seems like they really have a lot of luck when they get Fournette out on the edge and you know via the power or via some washouts to right or left side. So that's where really troubles you the most. They're not a not really a scat, you know, kind of a scat back, you know, quick break. It's just hand the ball off and let Fournette or Ivory bowl over you. Both of them are good at getting yards after contact as well too. So that's what their game plan has got to be. It's got to be possess the football, keep Blake Bortles in very, very manageable third and six or less situations. Don't make him have to do a lot and keep the ball away from the Steelers offense. If they can do that, get a opportunistic turnover from the defense or special teams once, maybe twice a game, then they have a chance. They're not an offense that's built to come out, you know, throwing against you. They have to balance it with the run. If they get behind on the scoreboard early, or if they get in a situation late in the game where they have to abandon the run, they're probably going to be in trouble.
So, Dave, did the Steelers, you know, look, we talked about this in the Bears game, and to me, this is not a very different situation than it was when they played Mike Glennon and the Bears. You've got a kind of a little bit more pedigree, but a little bit of a lackluster group of wide receivers. You've got a team that wants to run the football with a quarterback who has a big arm, but he hasn't been particularly successful. He's been inaccurate at times. you know, he's more known in the NFL circles as a guy who's put up all his numbers in the fourth quarter when the Jags are down by 20 points. Historically, that's where he's kind of gotten half to two thirds of his yardage is late in games. I mean, again, this looks like a very obvious strategic defensive strategy for the Steelers to maybe give your corners an opportunity to play, not necessarily press man, but to place a man on the outside and bring, you know, whoever it is, Mitchell, if Wilcox is on the field, bring safeties, you know, whether it's nickel or dime, bring guys down into the box and have at least eight guys in the box most of this game to deal with Fournette. Are you on board with that?
Yeah. I mean, look, I stop the run. Whatever you need to do to stop the run early, because that in my opinion is their biggest threat. You want to force them into an identity that they're not. Whether it be passing on first down. Or taking shots down the field, I think you want to kind of dare them to kind of do that. The Steelers' main issue this year has obviously been against the run, and really it's you kind of look at what the Jacksonville Jaguars rush defense, you can really carry that over to the Steelers' defense so far this season as well. It's really been feast or famine. The Steelers' defense has already allowed 13 runs of more than 10 yards entering week 5, and five of those went for more than 20 yards. I think it's not hard to remember which five those were. Most of those were outside zone runs. Of those 13 runs, one was by an opposing quarterback, so the other 12, of course, being by running backs. And of those 12 runs, David, 266 yards were gained on 12 runs, and that's 62.6% of all yards gained by running backs against the Steelers defense this season. Whereas, you know, I quoted you that stat a little bit earlier that 50% of the yards gained against the Jaguars defense this year by running backs came on 11 plays. Yeah, you know, 62.6 on 12 against the Steelers there, and if you back out those big runs, the other 77 runs by opposing running backs gained an average of 2.07 yards. I mean, that's amazing. 77 other runs outside of those big runs only averaged 2.07 yards. So, in short, they've been a feast or famine kind of defense. They either got to bottle you up or they're going to let you smack one on them. So, yeah, and look, the edges is where the Steelers have had most of their problems this year. And as I just mentioned, Fournette in particular is a guy that seems to do better when he's able to run, say, left of the guard or outside the tackle. So, I don't think the Steelers have been bad up the middle. So, for me to say, okay, get a guy down low in the middle, I don't think that's the biggest concern. I think the biggest concern is you're cracking and replacing maybe on the outside, becoming, you know, holding the edge and waiting for help to come there and not letting your safeties, you know, take bad angles like we've seen Sean Davis do or Mike Mitchell do or Wilcox do this year. So, look, just don't let them bust. Just, you know, 7-yard gains are going to happen in this game for the Jaguars. You just got to keep them at a minimum and make sure that you don't let them bust one, a couple of times in field flipping type situations there. If they do that, I think they're going to be just fine. But yeah, you're right. It's almost a similar situation as it was with the Bears. You really have a quarterback that hasn't lived up to expectations with a little bit of pedigree to him. And you got really a no-name receiving core, and you've got backs that are capable.
Okay, so we talked about the lack of injuries, which is going to make it interesting here for who sits in this game. And it's going to be, you know, this is obviously going to be the most difficult decision, because let's make the assumption that Marcus Gilbert is active. So the three obvious guys that sit right out of the chute are Josh Dobbs and two offensive linemen. So you've got those three guys. Filer will sit, and Hank and my God, I mean, I've
kid from LSU, Hawkins.
Jarrell Hawkins will sit. So that's three guys right out of the chute. We'll sit Big Dan to make it four. And then we're going to have to come up with three other names. And one of them is going to be a linebacker. One of them is going to be a wide receiver. And then I assume we'll sit Brian Allen. Will that be five?
Yeah, Mike Mitchell dresses. You have to think Brian Allen is going to be back down again.
Okay, so we got the standard five. And then it just comes back to this game that we've played here. Is it Harrison Motes or possibly, you know, Fort, I guess? And then is it Eli Rogers or Justin Houston? And Justin Houston didn't do anything to color himself in glory.
Hunter.
But he, again, but he, you know, his opportunities were limited as well. He had one ball thrown his way, which would have been, yeah, it was a, you know, it would have been a hell of a catch, but it was a ball that was, you know, catchable. Eli Rogers, you know, again, Eli Rogers dropped a punt, and people make it sound like nobody's ever made a mistake in a football game the way they talk about Eli Rogers. He didn't have a ball thrown to him in the Chicago game, and it was a game where if you watch the All-22, it wasn't because he wasn't open. He didn't have a ball thrown to him over the middle of the field. So, look, if you take him off punt return duties, he loses his slot receiver job. No complaints with what Schuster's done so far. He's been as advertised for a young guy. Obviously, the penalties aren't what you're looking for, but he's been able to catch the ball and run effectively with it for the most part, and he's going to be a guy who's going to be a big part of this offense going forward. So I don't know if there's room for Eli Rogers, but, I don't know how Mike's going to look at those two guys, Hunter and Rogers. They're each bringing something very different to the table. And if Rogers is not going to be returning punts, which he may be, but don't be surprised. There will be points this season where Eli Rogers is returning punts again. Dave, I don't know. I mean, to me, I think it's a coin flip. Do you give Hunter a second chance, or do you want Rogers to know that he's back? You know, like he said, it's not a firing, potentially good week of practice, and he's back out there this Sunday. I'm guessing it'll be Rogers.
That's inactive?
No, that is active.
Oh, yeah, I'm guessing it'll be Rogers. It's active as well, too, but it's merely a coin flip because we haven't heard anything other than Mike Tomlin saying, you know, it could happen this week. So, I mean, it's going to be an either or there for sure. So then it goes back to David Todd. Will James Harrison be a healthy scratch on Sunday?
I don't think so. I don't think they'll do that. Mike had the excuse, whether it's valid or not, we'll never have a good answer to, but Mike had a legit reason with Harrison missing some practice time last week to sit him. This is a game where you might want James Harrison to set the edge a little bit. So I'm going to take James over Arthur Motes this week. And you know, we're going to probably have, if nobody gets hurt, we're going to maybe have this conversation every week, but I think we'll see Arthur Motes sit this week.
All right, I'll take James Harrison as being – I can't give you – Arthur Motes still plays some special teams, you know, and I think that's enough to get him the helmet. So, I have no reason not to make James Harrison inactive this week. And if that happens again this week – you notice how Mike Tomlin's kept him on the injury report with an illness tag. Is this a save face situation? You can't tell me that James Harrison is still sick enough where you need to list him with an illness tag. You can't make me believe that.
Right.
I took the spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down last week. Okay, I accepted that a player can get sick on Friday, miss time, and be added to the injury report as questionable. I spit that medicine out on Monday or on Wednesday when James Harrison showed up there with an illness again. I'm not buying it. I think this is Mike Tomlin being able to say, well, you know, he's dealing with an illness here, and that's why he was inactive again on Sunday. So, all right, let me put my tinfoil hat away. All right, what else we got?
What else we got? I don't know. We had a game last night. Want to touch on that at all?
Boy, the Patriots defense all of a sudden either got better or the Buccaneers' offense didn't take advantage of certain things. I think there's a little bit of both involved. I thought Tony Romo, it was either Jim Nantz or Tony Romo said it later on in the game. You know, this was a short week. Wasn't a lot of time for Bill Belichick to fix a lot of the man concepts in his defense there. So he said, to hell with it. We'll just play a lot of zone this week. We'll worry about fixing it on the 10 days that we're fixing to have off here after this Thursday night game here. Look, anytime Brady gives you a gift in the form of an interception, almost a second interception, a fumble, and
two fumbles, right?
Was it two? I thought it was one. But I mean, a couple of sacks, you've got to take advantage of those types of things. And especially when
Nick Folk killed him. I mean, you know, I didn't, first of all, Romo, I thought, and I was tweeting this, you know, everybody's talked about Tony Romo and diagnosing defenses and telling you what to look for. And I think most people like that. I thought Romo was as aggressive and on point talking about how to manage the clock at the end of each half as anybody I've ever seen. I thought he was fantastic talking about what the Bucs needed to do, in the last 3 minutes of regulation. I just it was refreshing to hear that stuff.
Is he good or what? I mean, it seems like we talk about him every other podcast, but I mean, it's worth it just from a learning aspect to find every game that he calls every week and go back and watch them on Game Rewind, because you're bound to learn something in those situations, whether it's using the short side or the long side of field and things to look for in certain situations. He's all over it, man. And I know some people, people have already asked me, oh, what do you think? Romo's the perfect kind of guy to call a Super Bowl. Well, you got to remember that a lot of people watch the Super Bowl that haven't seen a damn football game, throughout the year. So you have to wonder maybe sometimes if that stuff is a little bit over the heads of most people. But I love the hell out of it. I love the pre-snap look for this, look for that kind of thing. I know it might be a spoiler. Some people might kind of consider it spoilers, but I absolutely love it. And boy, Jim Nantz, he seems to be giddy like a little schoolgirl sometimes during games. Now back to the you talking about Romo and the clock management there. At the end of the game, did the Buccaneers cost themselves maybe a
screwed up big time?
One more play.
Well, there's a couple things. You know, one of the things here, and, you know, I'm critical of Ben and the Steelers when they do this. When you have timeouts and you aren't going to use four downs, so let's take a typical drive late in the first half where you've got a minute, 20 seconds, and three timeouts. You never want to be spiking the ball. If you only have three downs, spiking the ball is a huge loss of down problem. And if you have timeouts and you have that kind of time, 80 seconds or something like that, that's an extraordinary amount of time that I think teams and players in the heat of the moment, they often misevaluate how long a play it takes. An incomplete pass takes 7 seconds. I mean, you know, what you don't want to be spiking the ball in those situations. The Bucs were in the opposite situation at the end of that game with 40 seconds and no timeouts, but four downs. Everything is four downs. And because they had so much field to chew up, you knew the shots they were going to be taking weren't going to be, 2-yard runs or 3-yard screen passes. They were going to be throwing the ball down the field. So first downs were less likely to be the thing that cost you the game. It was much more a time factor. So when they got that initial pass to DeSean Jackson and he was able to gain 25 yards over the middle of the field, that's where you run up and you spike the ball. And instead, they took 15 seconds to get set. They didn't get set. They snapped the ball, so they got a 5-yard penalty, and then they got an additional 10-second runoff. You know, they did so many things right, but that's one they didn't do right, and then I don't think they did it right on the last play of the game where you're 20 yards out and it's only a 3-man rush. The Pats lined eight guys up along the goal line. Romo pointed this out. It's really tough to try to throw a seam route and have the guy catch it on the five and run in on a kind of a quick hitter. What you have to do as Jameis Winston there is you have to run around for 10 seconds and hope a guy shakes free and you can drill one in there, because that's really the only way you're going to get it. So I thought the Bucs did a lot of things well. Their field goal kicker hurt them a lot. I think they did a lot of things well in the second half. Let's put it that way. It's a game they could have won. They got to be kicking themselves. And the Patriots, you know, they did enough to win again.
Did you hit on the fact that what happened after the onside kick and the first run by the Patriots?
I did not. And what Dave's referring to is the Pats recovered the onside kick with about 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go, roughly. And so what you have there is, let's just call it the 40-yard. They're on the Bucs 40, 35-yard, 37-yard line, whatever it was. And you got a first down, and you know Bill Belichick, the Bucs had two timeouts, or had one timeout, so effectively two with the two-minute warning. And what they did here is the Patriots ran on first down, which you expect them to do to force, you know, either the two-minute warning or the timeout. And a lot of people get this situation wrong, and they don't think about it. And it's very, you know, it's kind of – it's not an obvious thing necessarily. But so what happened was the Bucs called timeout with 2:03 left, and it gave the Patriots a second and seven. And the reason that was a bad decision, the reason the Bucs should have made the let the clock run to the two-minute warning and had that timeout – had the time used there is because when you gave the Bucs – when you gave the Patriots second down, they had a play here that they knew was, well, no matter what they called in their playbook, it would take at least 3 seconds. So what that opened them up to is that gave them the option to run or to throw, because if they throw an incomplete pass, there's no punishment to them because the clock is stopping anyway because of the two-minute warning. Now, had the Bucs let the clock run down to the two-minute warning and saved their timeout, the Patriots still could have thrown the ball, but if they throw an incomplete pass in that situation, which is exactly what happened, they threw an incomplete pass. If they throw an incomplete pass, now it's third down, and the Bucs still have their timeout. And that means if the Patriots run the ball or throw an incomplete pass or whatever, the Bucs are potentially going to get the ball with a minute 40 left instead of 40 seconds left, which is what happened later. So now I would imagine what would happen on second down is the Patriots, instead of throwing a pass, would have run the ball and forced the Bucs to use their last timeout so that their third down play would have taken all of the 40 seconds, so that you're really limiting the time the Bucs have. But it's a very small thing that had a massive impact on the game in terms of what could have been for the Bucs getting an extra minute. So, you know, if we weren't going, if we had the videotape in front of us, it'd be a lot easier to explain. I hope I explained it well enough, Dave. But it's just the little things like that. The reason I talk about this and write about this all the time is these can be game-changing things. And the Buccaneers ended the game with the ball on the, you know, the Patriots 18-yard line, whatever it was. And if they had three more downs or 40 more seconds, you know, they would have had a hell of a chance, a hell of a better chance to win that game than they did.
Yeah, definitely interesting to kind of see that play out there. And boy, you know, that I think the biggest aspect of what you just said was the fact that by using the timeout on the other side
at 2:03
at 2:03 is the aspect that it opens up the entire playbook for Tom. It's a free play at that point, because anything that you run, the clock's still going to stop. So it's not like you're saying, okay, well, if we run this, it's an incomplete pass, we give them a free clock stoppage here. So basically your entire playbook is open at that aspect, and thus you can kind of dagger them, continue to get into field goal range, which they ultimately, you know, did or were in all. But I think that's the biggest aspect of not wanting to take the time out where they actually did.
Yeah. So Romo didn't hit on that part of it, but you know, he did call it, you know, it was interesting. And again, the Pats without Gronkowski, their record without Gronkowski, by the way, is incredible now. I think it's, you know, they've won 11 straight road games and they're 12-0 in the last 12 games he hadn't played. Chris Hogan, a big factor in this one. Amendola, you know, Brady throws that kind of 20-yard touch out or you know, over the shoulder toward the sideline ball as well as anybody ever. And he completed some of those in a big way in the second half. But, you know, the Bucs had their chances. They were able to get some pressure on the quarterback and knock Brady down and get him hit a bunch of times. And they got the stops when they needed them late in the game, but just not enough. So you got the win there as the line moved from, I think, 6 to 4.5 without Gronk and ended up being a 5-point game with the game, all the money transferring hands, as we've seen a couple times in the NFL recently in nationally televised games, all of it changing hands on the Gutkowski field goal that went from, what, up 2 to up 5.
Is there anything, I don't know how much of the Patriots you've watched this year, but anything in your mind that leads you to believe that the Patriots aren't going to win that division and not ultimately be the number one or number two seed in the AFC, even though
the issue for the Patriots, and we've talked about this, is their linebackers aren't fast enough. And they're not. Are they getting enough pressure off the edge? That's the secondary issues are non. They're a non talking point for me. They've obviously had issues. They seem to be mostly communication issues. But McCourty and Chung, they'll get that stuff sorted out. They've been there forever. And Gilmore, I thought Gilmore played a pretty good game in this one. Malcolm Butler's a good corner, so they're talented enough and smart enough in the back there, and they have enough experience that I don't think the passing game aspect will be an issue for them. It's, are they going to be able to control the line of scrimmage and get pressure on opposing quarterbacks? So the communication thing's not a non-factor for me. So the secondary is a non-factor, but can they handle the guys up front like Gerald McCoy and good edge rushers as Tampa Bay showed? That's how they're going to lose games defensively.
Well, they're still a, 11-12 win team, though, right?
I'd be surprised if they didn't win 11 games, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you. And look, Belichick's going to, his teams are always continually on the rise as well, too. So barring an injury to Tom Brady, there's no reason to think that they won't win 11 or 12 games. And, yeah, I know they are 2-2 right now, and they were a play away from being 2-2.
Yeah,
3-2, and I know they're a play away from being 2-3, but I still expect them to be okay. Yeah, they might not win 12 games, but they're probably going to win 11 at a minimum and be right there for the number one, number two seed. I just don't see Buffalo doing enough to win that division over there. And of course, those two teams have to play a couple times this season as well too. All right, let me get my notebook open here so we can start getting into this week's games. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it. And you got me on the game last night, as I mentioned. We were using 4 as a line, and Dave had New England. I had the Bucks. So one for you. Some interesting ones here to open at 1 o'clock. One of the other things to pay attention to here this week is, you know, this shouldn't impact the Steelers, but the front of the draft, the top of the draft, is going to be impacted by what happens this week in some of these matchups. So, first of all, the Chargers and the Giants. The Giants are home -3. Both these teams come in 0-4. You don't see that very often. I don't think anybody would have expected it with either of these two teams. The Chargers made the decision at kicker this week to move on from the kid who unfortunately had a tough start to his NFL career, the Korean-born kid Koo. He gets bounced, I think, yesterday. The Giants and Eli Manning, brutal. Dave, they're a 3-point favorite at home. You know how I hate picking the Giants, and I hate rooting for Eli, but, you know, I don't think either of these teams are 0-4 teams, but somebody's going to lose again. So give me the home team. I'll take the Giants -3.
Yeah, I'm going to – boy, you're starting to gargle up there a little bit like you lost a bad connection there, but hopefully we'll have enough to get through it here. I'm with you. Look, this I think because it's in New York, I think Odell Beckham Jr. ends up having a better game here. I think Ingram able to do a few things at tight end, and that'll be enough there for them. Maybe they get a late turnover here. Okay, I'm with you. Give me the Giants at home -3 for their first win.
All right, Buffalo at Cincinnati. Buffalo +3. This is going to be, you know, whoever wins this game is going to be feeling pretty good about themselves. Obviously, the Bengals with a slow start, back on track. The Bills, it would be a huge win in the conference.
It would do a lot to kind of, you know, maybe not put the nail in the coffin with the Bengals, but this would be a damaging loss for the Bengals. So I'm going to take the Bengals at home, minus three. But obviously, if you're a Steeler fan, you're rooting hard for the Bills in this one.
Yeah, and look, I mean, like I've said all along, that defense of the Bengals is going to be enough, I think, in several of these games. And, you know, you got A.J. Green on the other side. I'm still just not – if the Bills win this game, even though it's just against the Bengals, I'll become more of a believer in them. But, look, Cincinnati is playing for their – Cincinnati really can't afford many more losses here. Give me the Bengals at home, laying the 3 points.
Yep, it's a, for those who don't remember, the Bengals are 1-3. So, you know, this is just getting them – trying to get back to treading water at 500 on the way there. The Browns are at home. Pick them against the Jets. I think the Jets have surprised everybody with two wins. Their defense, their defense has played really well the past couple of weeks. They were really good against the Jags last week. Dave, I'm going to just sentimentally take the Browns to get a win here at home, that they play better just across the board because they were awful last week against the Bengals.
Yeah, I think the Browns defense is enough, you would think, should be enough in certain games. Boy, the quarterback play in this one might not be fun to watch overall. I like how the Browns able to use their, their running backs at times. The Jets, of course, will be without Forte again as well, too. In this pick'em game, I'm picking the Browns to win their first game of the year.
Okay, I don't have a line for Tennessee-Miami. Do you have one for that?
I'll have to pull it up here. Why don't you go on?
Okay, we'll go on to the next one while you do that. That's Mariota is obviously the reason for that. Not quite sure whether he's going to go in this game. The Niners go to Indianapolis with Jacoby Brissett. Indianapolis has looked a little bit better offensively. The Niners, a little bit hard to tell. It's obviously transition time with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch kind of running the show. But, you know, they're competitive. I think they're a decent team. I'm going to take them on the road here over Indianapolis. Andrew Luck's practicing this week. That doesn't mean he's going to play next week, but he is practicing. But I'll go for the small upset with 49ers plus 1.5 at Indy.
And let's see. This is a tough game. I'll definitely be staying away from it. I'll go ahead and go with the Colts at home with no confidence whatsoever and no reasoning.
Okay. Arizona goes to Philadelphia. Arizona's get 6.5. You know, were you buying what you saw with Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer? That seems like a lot of points traveling east. I want to take Arizona, Dave, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take the Eagles. I'm not sold on the Eagles. But I'm really not sold on Arizona. They play a good game and a bad game. Give me the Eagles minus 6.5.
Boy, the Cardinals really need to get moving here, I think. The Eagles, look, Winston and that defense have had a decent start to the season here. I think the Cardinals pull this one out on the road, a straight-up win. So with that, I want the Cardinals plus the 6.5.
All right. I think one of the more interesting games of the week is in Detroit, and it seems like the Lions every week have one of the more interesting games. I feel like they're a pretty high-powered offense, but they win a close game over the Vikings in a low-scoring game last week, which I think the nature of the game surprised a lot of people. It surprised me. They're a 2.5-point favorite of the Panthers, who looked terrible at home, scored 9 points against New Orleans, and then go up to New England and win on the road, scoring whatever they had, 33 or something. So who knows what to make of this? The Cam Newton stuff, it looked like a very heartfelt apology that he made last night. So hopefully he's got that behind him. Dave, I'll take the home team again. I'll take the Lions minus 2.5.
Boy, how much of a distraction is this Cam Newton thing going to be? I don't know. I don't know what to think about this game either. I like a lot of the things the Panthers were able to do against the Patriots, but it was the Patriots. The Lions, that game against, who was it, the Vikings could have ended a little bit different there. I like Matthew Stafford in this one, and I'm going to go with you. Give me the Lions and lay the points.
Did you get a line there for Tennessee-Miami?
Let's see what we have here. The last thing I have is... minus 2.5 Tennessee. So Miami plus 2.5.
Okay, Miami's at home. Jay Cutler coming off as ugly a game as you can have. Two back-to-back. I mean, London's going to say keep that stuff, you know, keep that stuff home. Don't send us this Jacksonville-Baltimore trash and then Miami-New Orleans trash they got last week. Miami goes home. Dave, this is the first game they will have played at home. I think if that's right, they got you know, rained out that opener, and they played in London last week. So I'm going to say they turn things around here at home. I don't know if Mariota's going to be 100%. I like the Titans a lot, but last week's results scared me about how badly they got blown out by the Texans. So I'll give the Dolphins a bone here and say they win this one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know what to think about this one either. Who are the Titans? The Dolphins have had their issues on both sides of the ball. I think the Titans just try to run this one down their throat. I think they have success in the run. I think that'll be enough. So give me Titans lay the 2.5.
Okay, and just so we're clear, the bye week start this week. Atlanta, Denver, New Orleans, and Washington all on a bye. The 4 o'clock games. Seattle at the Rams is a pick'em. Who would have thought at the beginning of the season that we'd be 5 weeks in and Seattle would go to the Rams and be pick 'em? You had a better chance of saying that Seattle would be a 10-point favorite on the road. Dave, have you seen enough from the Rams to feel remotely comfortable taking them as even money at home against the Seahawks?
Boy, man, I tell you, they've been impressive. They've still got to prove prove it to me. And,
well, this would be it. This would be proving it,
yeah,
I think.
And I don't think they'd do it. Give me the Seahawks in a pick 'em game.
I'll go with my heart and take the Rams. The Ravens go to Oakland. Oakland minus 2.5. It'll be EJ Manuel at the helm. If you're a Steeler fan, kind of either way, the loser here is a you know, it's going to be a benefit to the Steelers. The Raiders are going to be competing for a wild card spot. Obviously, the Ravens in the division, if they were to take a loss, that really puts them behind the eight ball, and it'd be three losses in a row. So, Dave, I think both these teams are overrated, but I'll say the Raiders at home minus 2.5, I'll take them. But I don't like either of these teams.
Boy, no Carr in this game, and against that Ravens defense, there's a rat here or something. I don't understand. Yeah, the Ravens offense, you know, been shaky this year and all, but their defense is normally enough here. And one of those Raiders receivers, I think, is banged up in Crabtree. I'm not buying all this. I think the Ravens are a little bit better team with that, you know, going against a guy like in EJ Manuel. Give me the Ravens plus the 2.5 on the road.
If I remember correctly, these two teams played about this, maybe a little bit earlier in the season. Maybe it was week three in Baltimore. And I think David Carr threw three touchdown passes to Amari Cooper, maybe four in the whole game. And they scored on the last play of the game to win. So it was a good matchup. Now they go back to Oakland this year. We'll see how it goes. The future 4:25 game should be a great one. Green Bay at Dallas. Dallas coming off a rough defeat at home at the hands of the Rams. Big question marks about their defense. Dave, give me the Packers plus 2.5 and put Dallas on a little bit of a negative spin, losing two in a row at home.
Boy, this will. So I hope I get all my Steelers work done ahead of time because I definitely want to see this one. Can they stop? Can the Packers defense stop the run, and can the Cowboys defense stop the pass? It's hard not to root for the Packers in this one. So I'm going to go with you here. Give me the Packers plus 2.5 on the road.
Well, if you don't get it done by 4:25, make sure you get it done by 8:30, because I don't know that we want to call it game of the year to this point. But the Chiefs at the Texans, the Chiefs undefeated, the Texans looking like a new team with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. This should be a fun game to watch. I mean, this is must-see TV right now. If you're an NFL fan, Dave, I'll take the home team here. Give me Deshaun Watson and putting up enough points with the Chiefs. And maybe for the first time, we see somebody, enough points for the Texans. And maybe we see somebody for the first time slow down this Chiefs offense enough that, you know, 24, 27 points can win this game. Maybe I'm rooting with my heart here, but I'll take the Texans. And remember, obviously, the Steelers go to Kansas City next week.
Well, you see it just plus one on this, right?
That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see it, David. Look, I mean, they would really have to that Texans pass rush, I think, really needs to do something in this game. And the Chiefs deserve respect right now, I think. Alex Smith deserves respect. Obviously, if you're a Steelers fan, you're probably rooting for the Texans in this one. I don't see it happening. Give me the Chiefs on the road, laying a point.
I don't have a line for the Bears, Minnesota. That obviously, again, some question mark about the quarterback situation in Minnesota. Is Sam Bradford going to be back? We will see the beginning of Mitch Trubisky's NFL career, which should be, make that kind of entertaining viewing. Do you have a line for that one, Ben?
I got an open of Bears plus +3. So why don't we go with that unless something changes and we can adjust this, in the next day or two if we don't like what we see.
Okay, give me the Vikings. I think the Vikings are pretty good. I hope Trubisky does well for his sake, but I'll take the Vikings.
Yeah, I'll take the Vikings, lay the 3 points too right now as well.
All right, that takes us to Steelers-Jags, 1 o'clock at Heinz Field day. The Steelers are an 8-point favorite. I don't like anything about this line. It's the question of, is the Steelers offense finally going to, be the Steelers offense that we've hoped to see throughout this season? We haven't seen them put up 30 points. We really haven't seen them put up, we haven't seen them play a good offensive game. I think it's fair to say that. They have not been kind of anything close to what we've expected. I think that's largely on Ben, but not exclusively on Ben. They seem to be an improving defense. This is a better Jacksonville defense than maybe some of the statistics, as Dave pointed out about all the running statistics. Maybe it's skewed by a couple big plays they've given up. But Dave, I'm going to go with the Steelers, and I'm going to go with the Steelers with a comfortable win, largely because of Blake Bortles more than anything else. So I'm going to give the Steelers a 26-13 win, and a couple defensive turnovers are the key for them winning, and obviously that would be a cover.
I think the Steelers, I think they have the advantage, as I said, in a running game. I think Ben Roethlisberger does enough. I think he gets one or two deep passes completed in this game as well, too. Just don't give the Jaguars a short field, and you should be fine most of the game. I think the Steelers get out to a decent lead in this, and I think the Jaguars, for whatever reason, kind of get a late score in this one. I'm not picking the Steelers to score 30 points until they actually do score 30 points. So in the meantime, I'll take the Steelers 27-16 in this one, and thus I have them covering as well. And David, heading into this week, I am 31-32 against the man, and you are 24-39. So you're going to be owing these people.
I need a big week.
You're going to be owing these people a lot of money here for too much longer. All right, being as how your audio is kind of messing up here, I guess it's time to go ahead and start shutting this one down. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, find that donate button. David Todd will and I will be back together Monday morning sometime to rehash what happened at Heinz Field. David, Ben Roethlisberger, I think it's 20-1 at Heinz Field in the month of October. So there's absolutely no reason not to think that the Steelers won't win this game in some form or fashion. And I'll talk to you on
I may be up in our season tickets for 40 years. I'm obviously not entirely in Heinz Field most of that time in Three Rivers, but I may be sitting in those seats for the first time in 7 years on Sunday. So if I'm late on the tweets, that'll be the reason why. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.